Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 155 of Rain Delay Radio, a baseball podcast. Hope everybody had a very Merry Christmas and with your families and whatnot. I hope it was a great time. We all had a great Christmas here at the Rain Delay Radio crew. We got a very light episode here. Not super light. Very light news here, rather. It's just me here talking about the news. Shortly, Pat is going to be talking with Frack, and they're going to be doing the annual Festivus airing of grievances from our podcast here. So stay tuned for that. But first, just quick hits of news. Like I said, we'll probably end up talking more about these in a future episode, although because of the way that the holidays have lined up, Christmas this week, New Year's next week, so we don't have a full episode next week either. So probably sometime after the New Year's episode, sometime in the New Year is when we will theoretically talk about this news if we need to talk more about it. The big news from this week, really the only reason I'm even doing a news segment here, is that the Dodgers signed Yoshinobu Yamamoto for a 12-year, $325 million contract. Yamamoto is there's a couple of opt-outs in there. There's some other stuff going on here. Essentially, Yamamoto is a Dodger for the long term, joining obviously Shohei Ohtani in that 10-year deal, and then the Tyler Glasnow extension. So essentially, the Dodgers went out and got the three best players on the either the free agent or the trade market. Theoretically, there might be somebody else on the trade. They didn't get Soto. Soto went to the Yankees. So I don't know if there's anybody else better on the trade market off the top of my head. Certainly, it has felt like Yamamoto and Ohtani were the two best. The two best free agents. I guess you could make an argument for Cody Bellinger. I'm not sold, but I suppose you could make an argument for him. But Yamamoto signs with the Dodgers. Essentially, they have more than $1 billion committed to Yamamoto plus Ohtani plus Glasnow. Although just Yamamoto and Ohtani is $1 billion. Yamamoto cited he wanted to play with Shohei. The Mets and Yankees were also top bidders, but he went with the Dodgers. Incredible team becomes even better. Adding Yamamoto to that rotation. Pat and I talked about it quite a bit last episode that some team needed to stop the Dodgers from signing Yamamoto, and nobody did. Yamamoto is a Dodger. He's a Dodger, and he's going to be a Dodger for the next 12 years. He's only 25 too, so they're only signing him through age 36 or whatever. So, like, theoretically, this guy can be a Dodger, like a good for the life of a 12-year deal. So congratulations to Yamamoto. Congratulations to the Dodgers. There's nothing else really to say. I didn't think the Cardinals actually were going to sign him, but very frustrating as a Cardinals fan that they didn't sign him. I can't imagine how frustrating it must be as a Yankees fan that they didn't sign him. They didn't. So the word is that the Dodgers and Mets bid $325 million and the Yankees bid $300 million. Where they didn't go up to past that $300 million. So, like, apparently that was part of it. Who knows? It really seems like, he was probably going to go to the Dodgers no matter what. Yamamoto with the Dodgers. I swear I saw something about him having two opt-outs, but here we go. Yeah. He has an opt-out after year 6 and year 8. Certainly possible, maybe even likely, that he opts out after 6 years, because he can probably get a bigger deal, although I would imagine he would remain with the Dodgers if he opts out after 6 years. We'll see. We will have to see. Also, like I think a $50 million signing bonus, stuff like that, all that wild stuff. I believe it also makes it the Not by average annual value, but the largest contract given to a pitcher in MLB history, exceeding Gerrit Cole's. Apparently, that was part of the reason the Yankees didn't want to go higher than $300 million because they didn't think anybody should make more money than Gerrit Cole. Who knows if that's actually true, whatever the deal is, that's what it is. That is really the big news. The other smaller piece of news, Shohei Ohtani will be wearing 17 for the Dodgers. Joe Kelly, who wore 17 previously for the Dodgers and is going to be on the roster next year as well, reportedly said he didn't need anything from Ohtani to give up the number. He was willing to give it up pretty freely. Kelly wore 17 with the Dodgers in his first stint as well as wearing it with the White Sox. He wore 56 with the Red Sox, 58 with the Cardinals. So I don't know if 17 had any special significance to him or anything like that. And he will be a Dodger, I believe. Yeah, he's signed for another year. I don't know if they signed him as a free... I'm seeing buyout of contract option. I don't know if they signed him as a free agent as well this offseason. I think they must have. But Ohtani, being the nice guy he is, gave him a Porsche. he gave Joe Kelly's wife, Ashley, a Porsche as thanks for giving his number up. It's nice. It's cool. We see this pretty regularly with players giving up numbers to, big stars to come over, and giving, or not even necessarily big stars, just sometimes it's people who, guys who want the number. When the Cardinals signed Jason Hayward, he wanted the number 22, so it's very important to him. I believe it was the number worn by one of his high school teammates who had passed away or something along those lines. And Mike Matheny was the manager at the time, was wearing the number 22, had worn it throughout his career, and freely gave it up to Hayward. I don't remember if Hayward gave him anything in return. I also remember a story of, I want to say it was Brandon McCarthy... I don't think it was Brandon McCarthy. It was another Cardinal story. I think it was Pat Neshek. Pat Neshek wore the number 37 with the Cardinals. And, then the Cardinals traded for John Lackey, who had worn 37 throughout his career. And so Neshek gave up the number 37 to Lackey, and in return, 41. He was wearing 41, and Lackey wore 41 through most of his career, except for apparently a year with the Red Sox. Presumably somebody else was wearing it at that time. So Lackey wanted 41 when he was coming over to the Cardinals. Neshek, who was wearing 41 at the time, gave it up to Lackey, and in return, Lackey got him some signed... card, like a signed baseball card of some sort. And Neshek didn't, 37 had no, or sorry, 41 had no special significance to Neshek. He had never worn it before in his career. I think it just had been assigned to him and he didn't really care that much, although he did wear 37, which was the number he took after switching from 41 with the Astros and the Rockies. So I wonder if it gained some significance to him. He gave up 41 and Pat Neshek famously has an insane baseball card collection. And so, I don't want to say penance, but thanks. As thanks for giving up his number, he got him. It was a ball autographed by Babe Ruth. And Pat Neshek is a collector of stuff like that. So that was that. I believe there's been a baseball card one too, and I'm not remembering now. It's off the top of my head who it was who had a massive baseball card collection. There is a player who will trade you an autograph of his in exchange for a baseball card. I wonder if it's Pat Neshek, but there's certainly somebody who will, if you send them a baseball card, he will send you back an autograph. But I can't remember who it is, and Googling baseball card autograph is kind of wild. I think it is Neshek, yeah. And Neshek's X Twitter bio, I said X like a tool. Neshek's Twitter bio does even say Two-time MLB All-Star, two-time MLB All-Star, 2017 WBC champ, autograph slash card collector. So yeah, Neshek loves autographed cards and stuff like that. So I think if you send him another player's autograph or just any baseball card, he will send you back an autograph. All right, well, that's going to do it for the intro here. Thank you for listening to me drone on and on for about 10 minutes about, Yamamoto and Ohtani and all that stuff. I'm going to kick it now to Pat and Frack to do the annual Festivus airing of grievances. So stay tuned.
What's up, everyone? This is Patrick here with Frack for our Festivus episode. Man. Frack, what's going on, man?
Man, it's been, this season is stressful and you just try and help everyone else get by, but man, there are some grievances ready to be aired.
Yeah, this is our Festivus airing of grievances episode we do yearly. I'm super excited to actually get to do this segment this year. I am into a bottle of wine, having myself a nice, what's the flavor here? It's a Pennsylvania red raspberry wine from Juanita Ooh. Valley. It's Summer's Tanager. It's got a Cardinal on the bottle. So shout out Kuhan. I'm drinking some Cardinals here.
But I love that.
We do love that.
I am on my third drink, St. Arnold Banger IPA. Never really had this one before. I'm sure it's the 30th different beer I've had from this brewery. Well, but it's bad. It's not bad.
Well, Frack, cheers to you. Let's have some fun here. Quick sip.
Exactly.
Quick sip of wine here for the working man.
There you go. Yep.
All right. We're ready. We're ready. So, look, man, we've got some grievances. We're recording this the day after Yamamoto signed his contract. So, like, the first thing we're talking about here is, like, baseball economics. Like, this was a grievance we both had in common. But, like, my thing is baseball needing a salary floor. I don't know what your main thing was with yours, but mine's the need for a salary floor because I'm so sick and tired of these mid-market, like the, not just mid-market, Midwest. Like, I feel like it's just Midwest teams. Dude, it's Midwest teams refusing to spend any money. Midwest teams and the Florida teams just don't spend money. And I'm so tired of it. Okay. I'm so tired. Like,
I understand.
The White Sox should have been spending money while they had Luis Robert and Dylan Cease on their roster, and they didn't.
Now, like in a devil's advocate for them, they built a team to be good in 2020. Like, that's just crappy in general. Like, sorry you built a good team during the pandemic. RIP. However, no, you're right about the Midwest. It is all those teams. And
the Midwest
know
is a problem.
I think the core problem here is not baseball related. I think it's a city identity thing. Like,
okay,
imagine you're a resident of Pittsburgh for all your life and you'll never move.
God, I wish.
The Pirates are bad. The Pirates are bad. They suck. They're not good.
Yeah,
you're not going to bandwagon on a 95-win Cleveland team because of this weird rivalry thing where everyone in the Midwest never leaves and they all hate the other Midwest teams. And because you have a near monopoly on your fan base, because they're not going to go be a fan base of the closest Midwest team, you know that you don't have to spend money and you're going to get those fans no matter what. You have no competition. And
that's fair.
That breeds some absolutely dog piss teams. The entire NLAL Central, they just don't care. And so it's not really a salary floor, because if you make them pay more, they're just going to pay more for bad players. It's a problem of identity and culture and just, like, what else are you going to do on Cleveland on a Tuesday night? But go to a Guardians game. Go to a
Guardians game. Exactly. For Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I mean, it's like $45, but you're right. It's
our Guardians tickets. Like,
it is bad. And dude, all the
we need to make these teams spend money. Like, even if it's on dog piss players, like,
it's not necessarily on dog piss players. It's on good players on bad contracts.
Right.
So then this, I feel like the salary floor would reward teams to give terrible contracts to good players. And from a union perspective, the guys are getting paid. So does it really matter? No. But I think that they're still going to exploit the cheaper, younger players. So it doesn't solve the problem.
Which is like, okay, that's fine. Like, you have players on controllable contracts for a reason, so that you can afford veterans to build a decent roster. But these freaking teams don't do it. Like, I look at, and shout out to our good friend John, who's a Pirates fan, the 2013 Pirates.
Love John.
Love him. Great guy. Dude, I hope you're listening. The 2013 Pirates. That Pirates team should have won a World Series. But they did not spend money to add players in. Yes, they brought AJ Burnett and Francisco Liriano and Russell Martin over. But they did not spend big money to bring in a star that you could have with Andrew McCutchen. Like, I look up here.
You know, it's really, while you're looking this up, it's really funny. I saw that team in Pittsburgh, and I don't remember them being a super team exactly. So,
dude, they had like six all-stars.
It was, by the way, the game I'm talking about was Sonny Gray's debut. He came in the seventh, struck out McCutchen. I remember Marte. He was a rookie. I couldn't tell you another Pirate on that team. Yet, the A's... That's one of the best. The 2013 A's were one of the best A's teams of my lifetime, and they were not very good necessarily. But I don't remember that Pirates. I remember that Pirates team was like quote unquote a playoff team, but
yeah.
I don't
so remember they made them. It to. They had that awesome wild card game against the Reds.
Remember that?
Yeah, where Pirates fans got into the head of Cueto. They were just chanting Cueto.
Oh my goodness. And
Russell Martin had the huge home run. I think it was Marlon Byrd. I think Byrd was on that team too. He had a huge home run. But like, that's one of my favorite playoff games to watch because it showed how great a Pittsburgh Pirates fan base is when they can get behind their team. And I'm looking at the 2014 MLB free agent class. It was terrible. So I see why the Pirates didn't spend. But, like, they were still a fringe playoff team in 2014. In 2015, they even made the playoffs as a wild card team. They won, like, 99 games that year. But if they had spent money in that offseason, because of the salary floor, they could have brought in Jonas Cespedes, who was good at the time.
2015 Cespedes? I mean, that was fringe good, but I see what you mean. Yeah, I think I think that paying like a floor and saying you have to spend this much money is just going to move the goalposts a little. You still have the same problem, but the players are inherently getting paid more. I think that there's a structural fix to this that, oh, surprise, surprise, Billy Beane came up with, that the structural fix was denied. And if you accept that one easy, quick way, you've solved the problem, I think. So, back in like 2018, Billy Beane was invested in a group that was trying to buy the Red Sox. Uh-huh. It was a public group. So the whole point was it was going to be like Liberty Media owning the Atlanta team.
Right.
They'd buy the Red Sox. Billy Beane and his public private equity firm would buy the Red Sox. But the other owners saw this coming, so they retroactively said no corporations are allowed to own teams. Atlanta and Toronto were grandfathered in because they knew that their whole monopoly and the owner's monopoly has been oppressive to this sport for 120 years. they knew that that would threaten it. And think about the Braves. Sorry, Atlanta. I'm not going to use the slur here. What do you think about when you think about Atlanta's recent money decisions?
They held a gun to the head of Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna's families and said, here, sign this contract or else we kill your family. That's listen, what I think about.
First of all,
taking advantage of the Oakland A's, like, awesome job.
First of all, argument for a different podcast. I think the A's recreated Matt Olson in the aggregate. But they got a bunch of bad players also.
Wait, who?
The bad players are the guys they recreated Matt Olson in the aggregate.
Who they recreate Matt Olson with?
They got the new Mike Zunino. They got the new Gio Gonzalez. I think they got maybe one quadruple A reliever.
Trying to think. So Shea would be the new Zunino.
He is. Absolutely. He strikes out a billion times. Estes. I'm afraid to say it's Estes.
Huh.
He's so one of our friends, Digi, and I saw his major league debut, and he was like really young for a major league pitcher. Like, I know we'll get to this later in the podcast. The 2023 A's pitching roster was offensive and I want my refund, but Estes is good. Like, he had good double-A numbers and he looks fine. And remember, they weren't trading away 6 years of Matt Olson. They were trading 2 seasons. So, like, right. a bunch of bad players for 2 years of an MVP candidate? I mean, he can do worse. Granted, the optics of trading Matt Olson was abhorrent, and I hate it, but the whole point, what I mean to say is they did kind of take advantage of the A's because they had the ability to give long-term deals to dudes.
Yeah.
Good, bad, whatever. They were able to give long-term deals because they're publicly owned. And this is kind of what I think Billy Bean meant by publicly owned teams is if everyone had the Atlanta ownership, there would be a clear division between the haves and the have-nots. However, every single team could keep their homegrown players. And that's all that needs to happen in baseball. Like, I keep telling people this. If the San Jose A's were a fourth place team where Matt Olson hit 50 home runs, I would not complain. Because I would know that they may not have the smartest front office, but gosh dang it, I've got Matt Olson and nobody else because Matt Olson's on a team-friendly deal for the next 20 years. So I think that ownership model would save baseball, not necessarily a salary floor, salary cap, whatever, because jeez, you can't make baseball keep up with the Yankees. I know they're dumb. They're dumb. But you can't.
They are stupid.
You can't make baseball keep up with the
Land Yamamoto.
But you can keep the Yankees and the Dodgers from poaching the tiny teams. And
sure,
I think that the A's, the Nationals, to an extent, the Florida teams are kind of at a disadvantage here. And the Midwest teams just don't care. Like,
well, the Nationals spent, like, we can't pretend the Nationals didn't spend money. They brought in Scherzer. They brought in Jason Worth. Like, they are big players.
The good thing about the Nationals is that they have a wonderful ballpark that sells tons of tickets. They're getting beaten up in their TV
deal.
Wait, you
think Nationals Park is wonderful?
Okay, Okay, so I went with one of our friends, right? Went with several of our friends to a Nationals game for the first time. And the night before, I went by myself and I liked it. And when I went with them, they were like, this is the most stadium in baseball. And I was like, that's not a bad thing. Like, it's bland. I kind of like it. It's safe.
Fair.
There's no definitive feature. You focus on the game. And it's not like you focus on the game because the stadium's a crap hole. And it's not like you focus on the game because the stadium has too many tricks. It's just neutral. Kind of like it. Also, they do draw very well because of their location. It's the TV deal that makes them small market. And right. I do think, and I hate when I see this, although I stopped going on Twitter, I hate when I see the there's no small market teams. Like, yes, there are small market teams.
Oh, 100%.
There are small market teams. There are teams that cannot afford to pay whatever the hell the Yankees are cooking up, or the Dodgers in this case.
But the Dodgers are cooking.
The Dodgers, yeah. I think that that's the answer, is if every single team was owned by a corporation or a publicly traded company, they would be able to keep their homegrown stars, and you'd still have this class of teams. But that's the answer. It's not a salary cap. It's not a salary floor. It's just eliminating owners from this whole shebang. But here's the problem. Those owners, some of the most reactionary human beings on the planet, will not give up their authority and their dictatorship on
their
teams.
Looking at you, Art Moreno. You should have sold the freaking team.
He's the worst. Fisher is the worst if the A's actually leave.
Dude, I'm so glad I have an owner that doesn't suck. Like, John Middleton is fantastic.
But that's kind of the problem, because you're participating in a bad scheme. You just have a good guy. It's kind of like saying, oh, that Republican's not that bad. You see what I'm saying? Like,
I'd rather be Chris Christie, you know.
Exactly. You'd rather be Chris Christie, but at the same time, like, you're still participating in the scheme. So it's a critique of the system that I appreciate, of all of them, which is why I can't separate the worst owner from the best owner, you know? Unless the best owner is the Tigers. Like, you gotta have, there's very few owners in my lifetime who have taken out loans to keep their team going. And it's Ilitch, or I can't pronounce his name correctly.
Yeah, Ilitch.
Ilitch and yep. Steinbrenner. Yep. They're the only good owners of my lifetime. And Haas, the Haas who owned the A's in the 80s, they're up there because they took out loans to keep their team going. But right. Like, and that's what you and I would do if we owned our teams. But you can't tell a very rich person to do that, as absolutely awful as that is. That's why it's the whole publicly owned thing that, like, needs to happen.
Yeah, and, like, I feel like okay, so, like, I'm going to attack it, man. Something needs to be done about deferrals. Like,
ooh,
that's a big problem.
Continue. Go for it.
So, like, I'm not mad about what the Dodgers are doing, because I like the Dodgers. The Dodgers have always been, like, my West Coast go-to team. I used to fall asleep to Dodgers games and then Scully for like, 3 years when Utley was with the Dodgers. I would fall asleep listening to Vin Scully.
So this was 13, 14, 15?
When was Utley traded there? Yeah.
Utley was on the 15 team. I remember seeing him.
Yeah. Utley was traded. I don't think. Was he 2013? No, Utley was traded 2015. 14. So it was 15, 16, 17. I fell asleep to Dodgers games.
Do you remember Rick Monday?
I do. Rick Monday was fantastic.
I love Rick Monday. He's still calling the games, by the way.
But 13 and 14, I was listening. So I basically, when Puig came up, was when I started listening to Dodgers games to fall asleep.
You do have that connection.
I have a huge connection with the Dodgers. And, like, I love what they're doing. Like, I won't cheer for the Dodgers over the Phillies, but I'll cheer for them over any other team. Like, the Dodgers fandom I have is purely bandwagon, and that was because of Puig in 2013. Like, that's when I was, like, when I was watching, they were playing a game on ESPN, and Puig hit a grand slam. And I was like, this dude's awesome, I'm all in on this dude. And that's when I started watching and listening to Dodgers games nonstop, because the Phillies were garbage, and I was like, I don't want to watch garbage. Like, I love the Phils, but, like, that's funny. So I was watching Dodgers games and listening to Vin Scully at night.
That is sweet, and I do remember as a kid seeking out Dodgers games on the radio, because I was like, I gotta listen to Vin, man, and Rick being the original MLB draft pick. Yeah. The first guy. I loved, especially during the pandemic, whenever baseball changed, and we'll get into the rules changes later.
I listened to the Dodgers so much during the
pandemic. I want to hear Rick's opinion about the changes. And he was talking about his scorecard, especially in like 22 when like all the things were happening. Anyway, that is very sweet that you connected to the Dodgers on that level. How did you respond to 2020 then?
So like I was happy for him. Like I wasn't as happy as like Jiggy and Digi, because they're lifelong Dodgers fans. But like I wore my Dodgers hat and my Yasiel Puig shirt that I had the night they clinched, and like I was happy. I was like, dude, this is awesome. The Dodgers won the World Series finally, you know. Yeah, it's, people say it's a Mickey Mouse championship, but
it's not. It's the only real championship of my lifetime.
They went through like five teams to win it.
It's the only real playoffs of my lifetime.
Yeah. But so like,
I wish, yeah.
And like, honestly, if Bryce Harper did not sign with the Phillies and had actually signed with the Dodgers, I was going to become a full-time Dodgers fan. Like,
really?
I was just going to abandon the Phillies for the Dodgers, because Bryce Harper, before he was even a Philly, was my favorite player in baseball.
Like, I remember that.
Harper since he came up.
Mm-hmm.
And like when it was rumored that the Dodgers were going to sign him, I was like, dude, if he goes to the Dodgers, I'm a Dodgers fan for life at that point. Mm-hmm. I love Bryce Harper, but he's a Philly, so you know.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, happy.
I'm happy.
But this is not about the episode.
I have two fun teams I can watch.
Yeah, this is not the episode about you being happy. Continue.
No, I'm miserable. So, like, here's the thing. I think it's great that the Dodgers got Shohei Ohtani. It's great for baseball. Like, he gets to play for a historic team.
It's fine.
I don't... How do I put this?
While you're thinking about that,
the deferrals are insane. Deferring $68 million of a $70 million contract is insane. And the fact that he offered that for every team is insane. And I'm honestly shocked that the commissioner's office didn't investigate it, that they allowed it to go through. I feel like any other sport... Like, if you look at hockey, Ilya Kovalchuk signed a 15-year contract.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I haven't thought of that guy. I have his jersey in my closet.
Is it a Devils or a Thrashers jersey?
Thrashers.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Anyway, so, continue.
Yeah, he signed a 15-year contract with the Devils. And the commissioner's office blocked the contract and said... You cannot go for that long. So they went, because it was a way to bypass the salary cap. So instead it became a 12-year deal. And then the NHL put a clause in their next CBA that contracts could only be a certain length. Now, in this case, like, cool, the Dodgers got, like, did the Dodgers really need him to defer $68 million? Absolutely not. They're stacked. They're loaded. And, like, it kind of offers, like, an unfair advantage, not just to the Dodgers, but large market teams in general, to be like, yeah, we're going to defer 98% of your salary over this 10-year contract, and we'll just pay it out when you're done. And they're going to make so much money off of him just being a Dodger that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that's, and this is,
whereas you have them pay the full $70 million right now, $70 million per year. I don't think they bring in Yamamoto or anything like that. And like, this is like where I worry with Soto being a free agent next year, that he's going to sign a contract where like 50% of the salary is deferred or something like that. so he can go to a big market team, like staying with the Yankees or coming to Philadelphia. And like, as a big market fan, sure, it deferrals benefit me, but it does not benefit those other teams.
Okay, I will say, for the deferral's sake, remember about our earlier conversation about the Midwest teams.
Mm-hmm.
If you include them as a block, they're kind of a majority, or they're close to a majority. So I don't think anything will get out of hand with the big teams doing deferrals. Ohtani is different. We'll get into this in the sim episode.
Yeah.
When you get me back on the sim to talk about our 100%. Baseball offseason simulation, we will get into the Ohtani deal from an economic standpoint, as I was one of the moderators. The swing vote, by the way, just to preview it, I was the swing vote.
You were in the Ohtani deal. You're the reason why. Oh,
the single reason why. Warble said one thing, Digi said one thing, and I flip-flopped in a day and a half of arguments. I am the single reason why the Ohtani deal happened. But we'll get into that in a minute. In a different episode. I think that Ohtani is such an important value worldwide, which sounds weird.
It's I not, remember, though.
Remember the not. Show, I remember the Shohei of 2018 and thinking about that guy as a worldwide value is like, what? It's absurd. But I think that it's such a unique case that baseball's gonna like wish it off as it didn't happen. Like, oh, it's fine. It's fine, dude. Like, he's Ohtani. Don't worry about it. We're not gonna do deferrals like this again.
Sure.
I'd like
and then
to believe
Juan
it.
Soto has 90% of his salary deferred when he re-signs with the Yankees or signs with the Red Sox or the Phillies or something like that. And then it's well, now we have a problem.
And that might be the case, and that's when you may start to see them legislate things, and then they'll say, why were you favorable to the Dodgers? But I don't think that anyone is making Ohtani's money in marketing. No one.
Oh, no. He makes, I think he makes $60 million a year in just marketing.
So that's kind of what I'm saying, as this is a one-off. Yeah. They don't have to legislate because, oh, is Juan Soto going to go make $60 million in marketing? Of course not.
No, absolutely not.
So then he'll be sitting there at the bargaining table next year in front of Brian Cashman or his replacement, dear Lord, saying, no, you can't defer anything. I'd actually like to make $60 million a year. I just see this being a one-off, and I think that the commissioner's office is crossing their fingers and holding their heads saying, please make sure this is a one-off, because, yeah, it's bad for the sport, because as we know from participating in the off-season simulation, deferrals and backloading is a veto.
Oh, yeah.
It's a veto.
And, the Dodgers are so loaded right now, and I think there's worry from fans, I'm in the minority. I love what the Dodgers are doing. Mm-hmm. I think this super team's going to be awesome to watch. But most of baseball are terrified that this collection of stars is going to ruin baseball. Because I don't think fans want to see another 90s Yankees situation where, like the late 90s, early 2000s, where the Yankees were literally either winning or in the World Series basically every year.
Now, see, I don't remember that. I was alive, but don't remember, you know. I scoff at the notion, and I think it's because I'm a hater for players, not for teams. But, I think one of our Dodgers fans' friends, said this, and I think it's true. Dodgers fans were getting burned out by 100 loss meaningless teams.
Oh, 100%.
A bunch of toys for them to look at. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't mean they're going to win the next 6 World Series. In fact, I'm
sure
it doesn't move the needle for me. Ohtani, sort of. Yamamoto does nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, if Yamamoto's as advertised, what a rotation. If Yamamoto goes full Daisuke, oh man, are the Dodgers in trouble with that contract.
I think that Yamamoto, I bet on his longevity. I do not bet on his efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Like, I think he'll still be around in 10 years, and he's a good, he's a number three starter. Yeah, you want him on your team. But, like, is he the guy? I don't think so.
Buddy, if Yamamoto just got 325, imagine what Roki's getting when he comes over.
Listen, again,
Roki's going to be the first $400 million pitcher.
Roki is good. Like, dude, all this, ridiculous all this, good. Like, I'm a hater for Yamamoto, but Roki is so good. So, again, we'll get into the Sim episode about the Yamamoto contract, because
Yamamoto contract, funny too.
That Yamamoto contract in the Sim made me want to jump off a bridge. Arguing that ad nauseam.
What made you want to jump off a bridge more, the Baez trade or the Yamamoto contract?
Listen, not to give things away, but I vetoed the Baez trade and I said, we're not stupid, right? And then it got approved, and then I started publicly.
God, I started complaining everyone.
I was like, no, everyone sucks. You all suck. And the good news is, after that trade, I ran the Sim for the next 2 weeks because everyone gave up, which was nice. But at the same time, like, trade. I hate that the Tigers GM just turned that in as a joke that he didn't think anyone would accept. And then they were like, well,
we both thought that was not going to go through. We were like, yeah, this is basically a meme trade at that point. And when it got approved, we were shocked.
The discussion was, do you think he would turn down his no trade clause? And I was like, sweet baby Jesus, could he trade him to someone else? Like, I'm not going to stop someone from trying to trade a bad contract, but this is the deal. Like, I would have forced the Tigers GM to pick another GM to trade him to, and I might have accepted it, but like, I was the only one who was bringing that up.
I wanted Chase Jung.
What tickled your fancy of Chase?
Dude, he can smack the hell out of the ball. And like, he's another affordable prospect that's further strengthened the minor league system I built.
Now,
and like,
again, for anyone who may
I went
not,
full process mode,
you did. And for anyone who's listening to this who doesn't know about the Sim, which I really doubt, I think everyone
when
listening
we
knows
do
about
our,
the Sim.
When we do our Sim episode, I'll go full in on what my mindset with running the White Sox was.
I think
but this
we
is
may
like
need,
a taste.
Yeah. Yes, I think we may need to have two episodes because I need to hear yours and I need to hear Dylan's. But for anyone who does, and I think everyone listening kind of knows, but I think that Chase is fine. I don't know if he's better than his brother. I think he might be.
Oh, I 100% think he is.
Really? Why?
He his swing, man. Like, I watched that swing, and I'm like, dude, that swing is smooth. And, like, the way the ball comes off the bat, I'm like, this is his second baseman that I can see hitting 300 with 20 home runs a year.
You are kidding me. He's a second baseman?
He is a second baseman.
That's terrible. I'm sorry. His brother's a third baseman. That's more valuable. Are you kidding me? He's a second baseman?
He's a second baseman.
That but is so
I
mid.
Believe he can play third, too.
I mean, cool. That just means he's a first baseman.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe he's a better hitter, but Josh is good. I'm sure Jace is fine, but anyway,
Anyways.
The Sim discussion is a whole different thing. However, I'm not as worried about the Dodgers building a quote-unquote super team, because what happened to the Padres super teams?
Yeah, that's gone.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It usually does, like, super teams don't work out. I think about the 2011 Phillies and I cry. You know, it literally took a rally squirrel and Ryan Howard's Achilles exploding to kill the 2011 Phillies. It took luck. It took luck. The Cardinals didn't deserve that title. Sorry, Tuhan. They didn't deserve it.
First of all, my Achilles exploded in 2011, so I get it. Also, yeah, it was 2011. Also, the Cardinals have never deserved their World Series titles. It seems like every year they win, you look back, and there's a better team that got eliminated before.
Here's our next grievance, devil magic in the BS, you know?
And the Cardinals just use this to, like, be lazy and not better their team, and it's ridiculous. Absolutely offensive. The last Cardinals game I went to, and Busch Stadium was better than I remember it being. I'll give them that. But, like, they were a last-place team. They were playing the A's, a last-place team. It was a battle of losers, and that's exactly what you expect a Midwest team to do. But, oh, the Cardinals have this tradition, and, oh, they're so historic, and, oh, they're so, like, no, they're bad. And they know they can be bad and still go to the playoffs in their crappy division that no one cares about. Yep. So, going back to the Midwest teams, they're all offensive.
Moving on, my next grievance. And, you know, I just praised the Dodgers, but, like, the bias for the West Coast is insane. The belief, and you know what, this is, a belief that one of our friends has, and he's just like, why would anyone pick the East Coast over the West Coast? Man, you know what? Not everyone wants to live in freaking nice weather all the time and pay high taxes. Like, the East Coast is 100% just as viable. And by the way, our summers are not unbearable like California. Okay? We don't live on a fault line where we could just sink into the ocean at any moment on the simplest earthquake. You know, I don't pay 50% of my salary in taxes like I would in the West Coast. Sure, you got fantastic food, nice weather, but the East Coast is just as viable. What, you're afraid of a little cold? You're afraid you gotta put a jacket on? Oh, big deal. The cold will toughen you up. There's nothing wrong with the cold. In fact, I prefer colder weather to warmer weather because it's easier to make myself warm than it is to make myself cold, like I would have to in the sweltering summer. The West Coast bias is unreal, and it's honestly, like, one of the worst takes for why a player or someone should pick a team. You know, it's like, he chose the Dodgers but because of Shohei's there, but, why would Yamamoto choose the East Coast over the West Coast? Well, number one, the East Coast, you're in prime time, buddy. You want to play on the biggest spotlight? Come play 7 p.m. Eastern time. The spotlight, the prime time, when everyone's watching. Now, you don't get that in the West Coast. And on the West Coast, people are going to fall asleep listening to your starts. You know, and that's part of, like, why I kind of wanted Shohei to come over to an East Coast team. So people could watch him in prime time and not have their Shohei experiences being falling asleep to a Dodgers game.
I have seen Ohtani in a lot of meaningless games. A lot.
Yeah, he played for the Angels for 6 years.
A lot of meaningless games. I remember his fourth major league start that I tried to convince all my friends to go to, and everyone was like, who's Ohtani? I was like, you all suck. But, like, and he wasn't very good in that fourth start. And I think that I mean, I'm in the middle, sort of. And so I'm less biased, would you say, about this whole East Coast, West Coast thing? Unless I don't have a horse in the game, necessarily. I think the prime time aspect is real, but at the same time, the prime time thing is the central. Like, that's the time zone, because you're in the middle of the two coasts. This central is what matters. And so, like, however, like, the West Coast is 2 hours away from the central. That's kind of bad. East Coast is only 1 hour. There you go. But, like, that's the problem with the Midwest teams. They're in the best time zone, and they don't care about building.
They're mid. They put the mid in the Midwest. That's why it's called the Midwest.
And I don't understand why anyone lives in the Midwest. And that's a topic for another day. But, like, you can say the whole weather thing about the East Coast, West Coast, and the taxes are a political thing that is encroaching a California criticism. So I'll talk about that later. But the East Coast and the West Coast are both habitable. They're both fine. If someone lived there within 100 or so miles of the coast, I would say, oh, you're in a good part of the country. Kind of. If you're in the southeast of like eastern North Carolina, I'm like, what are you doing there? Get out of there. Yeah. You're going to get flooded tomorrow. But, and again, there are parts of the West Coast, Seattle, where it's like, come on, Seattle's going to get destroyed in an earthquake in 2043.
Oh, 100%.
Do you really want to live in that?
California's going to break off the U.S. and sink into the sea, man.
Listen,
Denver's going to be the new California.
Listen, California, the thing about California is they're going to get really bad earthquakes every 80 years for millennia. But they know that, so they can prepare for it. I mean, not to say too much, but like Japan gets bad earthquakes and they're doing all right because they prepare for it.
Fair.
San Francisco is prepared for it. Seattle was built on a fault line. They discovered it in the 1980s, and then they said, okay, we're going to stop building schools and hospitals on the fault line. Will we close the current ones? Of course not. So when the fault line goes off in 2043, give or take a couple years, schools, hospitals, they're all going in there. And the United States government's official position is, if it's a summer, it's going to be the worst disaster of all time. And we're going to need helicopters to get into Seattle for the next couple months. And so what I mean to say is,
East Coast is better.
East Coast is better. Also, the Mariners will be leaving Seattle in our lifetimes. So where are they going? Where are they going?
They're going into the fault line.
You're going into the fault line, and then if it's mid-season when everyone's on the beach, that's going to bring the death toll and the 10-foot tsunami into terrifying levels. Not to get morbid, but B, where do we move the Mariners and the Marlins? Because you know Miami's not surviving the next 20 years of climate chaos. So.
Oh no, they're going into the ocean. But like
exactly. So it's kind of the economics thing is kind of tied to this of like. The West Coast is more volatile weather-wise. I think that there are California cities that will be fine because they'll adapt. Because California is pretty adaptable. The cities are adaptable. The Bakersfield, the valley parts of it, they're screwed. Don't even bother saving them. The East Coast is adaptable and habitable. The West Coast is adaptable. If you get what I'm saying. So, like, the rivalry should not be between them. You should be ganging up on the middle.
100%.
But I think that a lot of the places that are habitable will be around Tennessee.
Yeah.
Like, if
I'm the Yellowstone blows.
Don't get that crazy. But if I'm Major League Baseball, if I'm any sports league, I'm thinking Knoxville's gonna get a team in 20 years because that's just where everyone will be. So I appreciate your rivalry here, and I'm excited to engross myself in the East Coast. I am excited.
Now, to pivot off this West Coast bias, I think the hatred towards Philadelphia, I'm feeling saucy, so we're getting into this. I think the hatred towards Philadelphia is overblown these days. Guys, it's 2023. Wake up, okay? We have stopped throwing snowballs at Santa Claus. We have stopped throwing batteries, okay? We don't even boo our own players anymore. We gave Trey Turner a freaking standing ovation and turned his season and the Phillies' entire season around. Like, sure, Eagles fans, like, yeah, we're still wild. And, like, we will stand outside the NovaCare Complex with a trash can and label it Darius Slay and James Bradberry. But we're passionate. We love our teams. We hate our teams because we love them. And I think the hatred towards Philadelphia, not only towards the fan bases, but the city itself, is honestly insane. Come here as a tourist. Come here as a tourist and see what Philadelphia is like, especially in October. Come here in October and see what Philadelphia is like, and you will understand Philadelphia. Philadelphia is an extremely viable place for baseball stars to land. Bryce Harper chose us. Bryce Harper, the guy who was the face of baseball at the time, and honestly, in my mind, still is one of the faces of baseball, chose this city. And not only did he choose Philadelphia, he decided, oh, I've been a Philadelphian my whole lifetime. Dude, he took the pandering up to 12. Up to 12, he took the pandering. If Bryce Harper loves us, why can't other people? I think the hatred is so overblown anymore. Come here in October. See what Philadelphia is about. Check out the Liberty Bell. Check out all the historical stuff, the art museum. It's all incredible. You know, see Boathouse Row. You know, maybe check out Kensington if you want to see what a drug crisis looks like. But like,
that's where I'm going.
Dude, the food here, the food in Philadelphia is unbelievable. The cheesesteaks here, unbelievable. And like, you have to try Philly cheesesteak because it's not like it is everywhere else. It's incredible. A Philadelphia soft pretzel, unbelievable. A Philadelphia soft pretzel is great. In the summer, water ice, which is Italian ice for all those uncultured non-Philadelphia people, water ice is fantastic. You know, get yourself some nice water ice from a local shop, not Rita's. Now, you know, where my fiance lived on the corner, there's this really good water ice place. Fantastic. Water ice is incredible. Tomato pie, fantastic. If you don't know what tomato pie is, it's kind of like Sicilian pizza, but like not a lot of cheese. It's kind of like sprinkled on the top. Tomato pie is fantastic. Come to Philadelphia. Come to Philadelphia in October and understand what we're all about. Feel the vibe of the city when the Phillies are in the playoffs, when the Eagles are an unstoppable team, and when both the Flyers and Sixers are good. And if you still don't understand Philadelphia, if you still don't understand what we're about, I'm going to quote Garrett Stubbs from his Philadelphia hype video. If you still don't understand Philadelphia, then get the F out of Philadelphia. Fantastic city. And you know what? You can call us savages. You can call us bad people. That's just a badge of honor. But hey, at least we didn't throw trash on the field when we lost the NLCS. Unlike the Braves, who threw trash on the field because a call didn't go their way. Ugh, catcher's interference. That's what it is. Catcher's interference. We are not even the worst fans in the sport anymore. We are the most passionate. We are the most diehard. And you know what? Kyle Schwarber is a good baseball player. And I'm tired of hearing that he's not. Listen here, batting average nerds. Listen to me. He gets on base. Over 100 walks. Over 100 walks. He scored over 100 runs. He drove in over 100 runs. He hit 40-plus home runs. Kyle Schwarber is a good baseball player. Yeah, you can't stick him in the outfield because he can't field. But man, at DH and at leadoff, he's a fantastic leadoff hitter. And the Phillies' record with him at leadoff shows it. It shows it. Because I think they're like 90 and something when he bats leadoff over his entire career in Philadelphia. I love Kyle Schwarber. I will defend that man with my life. He's a fantastic player. Is he elite? No. But he's not terrible. He's not terrible. He's a great, great guy to have on your team. Not just from what he can do with the bat, but as a vibes dude and a clubhouse leader, this Phillies team would not be where they are right now if Kyle Schwarber didn't come here. Because guess what? He's made the playoffs in every year of his career but one. But one.
What was the one year, do you know?
I think it was... Was it nine? So I gotta pull up Kyle Schwarber now.
Okay, because it sounds like a very common Cubs L here, not to bring up the theme of Midwest teams.
No, it absolutely is. 2019 was the one year that the Cubs didn't make the playoffs. They finished that season 84-78.
Which is making the playoffs in this year, but anyway.
Schwarber is good in the playoffs. He's even better. Philadelphia is great. Come to Philadelphia. I'm so We're in 2023. We're not in the 1960s. We can stop talking about throwing snowballs at Santa Claus. We can stop that. I've had enough of it. I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm tired of seeing every article written about Philadelphia, like freaking John Heyman. You know, John Heyman writes an article about a player coming to Philadelphia, of course, and as to put in, of course, this is a city that threw snowballs at Santa Claus. It happened in the 1960s. Nobody cares anymore.
Listen,
we're done with it.
If John Heyman is bothering you, that's a skill issue.
No, he doesn't bother me. And it's the fact that all mainstream media talks about when bringing up Philadelphia and their fan base as well. Oh, remember, they threw snowballs at Santa. Like, Christ, ESPN put out a freaking tweet about the anniversary of throwing snowballs at Santa Claus. Like, come on. You don't have anything better to do?
Do you think that the mainstream media has ever once said a single nice thing about my favorite baseball team? They haven't.
No, I appreciate it. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the Philadelphia hate. I'm over it. Like, yeah, we wear it as a badge of honor, but like, honestly, at some point, stop living in the 1960s, realize what a great city Philadelphia is and what great passionate fans we've got here.
No, you're right. I think that as a fan base, you should be personally offended. You should be personally offended, is what I mean to say. But like, John Heyman, really? That guy? That guy,
I was using him as an example.
Yes, I appreciate it.
He was an example.
He's a disorder. And I think that...
Swig a wine for Philadelphia, ladies and gentlemen.
Cheers to that. Cheers to... I let you rant.
A blue-collar city, by the way.
I let you rant because I respect your opinion tremendously. And I wanted to hear what you had to say about a town that you really have known your whole life, right?
It's all I've known. Like, I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia. But, like, it's the same in the suburbs, man. Like, that passion extends into the suburbs. Like, I grew up 30 minutes from Philadelphia, essentially.
Yeah, right.
And you feel that here. And, like, you see people celebrating on the streets in Philadelphia when the team wins a championship. We were celebrating on the streets in the suburbs, too.
Right.
When the Eagles won the NFC title game last year, I was running up and down the streets with other people, cheering, high-fiving. And, like, we're not talking about, like, 50 people. We're talking about hundreds to, like, 1,000 people. It's the passion of the area, of the Delaware Valley.
It's a collective.
And Lehigh Valley.
I'm just thinking about how anyone who focuses on our nation's revolutionary aspects, and because people could be cynical and say, well, they weren't revolutionary for all, but like, they brought up the idea for all. Yeah. They brought up the idea for equality. Where did it come from?
Philadelphia. Without Philadelphia, you don't have America.
And in the world before America, what was the one city that Europeans saw as real across the pond?
No idea.
Philadelphia. They were like, well, Philadelphia is a real town, but like, Boston, New York. Like, Philadelphia Boston has its own thing. I get it. It kind of has a claim here, but like, Philadelphia invented democracy. It's one of the most important cities in the world, in world history. And it kind of has a different veneer now. Veneer, not topic, but veneer. But like, oh my goodness, it's Philadelphia. Like, it was invaded by the British. And I think that before it was invaded by the British, it was seen as like this revolutionary hotbed in a way that not very many cities.
It was America's first capital.
Yeah,
Philadelphia was the first capital of the U.S.
And we're a bunch of morons for not keeping it there.
Oh, 100%.
A bunch of morons. It was a slavery thing. why it wasn't kept there. And New York is our economic capital, blah, blah, blah. What do I care? Philadelphia is our Philadelphia is our ideological capital in a way that is so intrinsically important that I can't divorce myself from a Philadelphia identification, and I've barely been there. Like, I'm an A's fan, so that's a whole different thing.
You gotta come up here this summer, man. Come up. Let's catch a Phillies game.
Let me move to the East Coast first. Move and to the East Coast. Say no more.
Come on up.
But, like, you're tied up in recent Philadelphia history, which is, like, crappy and lame. No offense, but, like, the whole Santa Claus thing. It's lame. And the whole Kensington thing. Like, I know about Kensington, and I've never been there because it's such a... You sell crack to yourself. I've sold crack to myself. And I mean to say that, like, the ideological importance of Philadelphia should ring throughout the centuries. And you should be clinging to that and reminding yourself of that every time ESPN puts out a dumb, stupid tweet about booing Santa Claus. Like, you need to be thinking, like, oh, well, everyone in Philadelphia really didn't like the mosquito outbreak of 1776, but, like, you're damn sure that it was the only city in America. It was the only city in America, and everyone knew how important it was when we won it back from the British, that we created some of the most revolutionary ideals in human history. So, be proud of that.
All right, Frax, throw me a grievance, man. What do you got?
So, I have been complaining about the economics of baseball in a public-private ownership standpoint, and so you're expecting me to complain about the A's. Honestly, I just want this whole thing to be over. Like, oh my goodness. I think it would be really funny if the 2025 A's were playing in the San Francisco Giants Stadium. They sneak into the playoffs with 83 wins, and the Giants don't. Like, I love that. That's kind of like
so funny.
Kind of my dream outcome here. And, like, like, I know they're leaving Oakland for like 20 years, and then they'll come back to San Jose or whatever. But, like, that's objectively great, because they're going to be, they should have been playing in the San Francisco Stadium since 2020. You haven't been to the Coliseum. It's a disaster. And more of the, of course, you want to blame the owner for leaving the city. I think he does deserve a lot of the blame. The Oakland City Council is a bunch of incompetent fools. I can't express that enough. They're all dumb. So, like, it's everyone's fault. But one thing that I can specifically complain about this year, to the point where it impacted my baseball viewership, is the 2023 Oakland Athletics pitching staff.
Yeah.
Sweet Jesus.
Tell me about it. So I didn't watch any A's games, except for when the Phillies went to Oakland. Well, except for when the Phillies went to Oakland and swept them, which, by the way, the Braves could not do. Braves could not sweep the A's.
Wait a second. When was it? When was that Phillies?
That was Phillies in June.
Game was like June, yeah, something like that. So, first half of the April and May A's were the worst team of all time. The June through September A's were not the worst team in the league.
Like, yeah, it was the Royals, wasn't it?
In July, it was Arizona.
Right.
You know, the team that went to the World Series.
Yep.
In August and September, it was the Rockies. It was the Rockies. Oh, yeah. Because the Rockies ended with, like, an 80 WRC plus team. Like, it was bad.
Yeah.
So, I'm going off memory here, because Fangraphs isn't loading like I want it to, but in the last 10 years, the 2019 Orioles typically hold the record for the worst pitching roster. And when you're talking about salary floor or cap, if Major League Baseball really cared, they would have stepped in to that 18, 19, 20 Orioles team. They would have stepped in and said, hey, you can't be this bad. You're throwing off our whole vibe. But they didn't. And that's why I'm a big believer in investigating the Orioles, because A, their GM's a huge Trump supporter, and I don't agree with that. And B, I think they're doing something sketchy. Like, they were bad. But anyway, the second worst team when it comes to walk percentage is the 2023 A's. They walked 10.9% of the batters they faced. So if I turn on a game of my favorite team pitching, there's a 10% chance they're going to walk the batter.
That's what? 9 batters a game.
What? The hell? Where's the entertainment value in me turning on a game and being like, oh, Shintaro Fujinami is going to walk the next 6 dudes. Can't wait to see how we turn this game around. Like, what? Are you kidding me? I think that... So, going into that season, there were not... Like, the bullpen got a little worse. Some of the guys who were good were injured. They let go of some guys. You could tell that the bullpen was going to be worse. And the team was a 100-loss team. For the first time since Ricky Henderson was a rookie, they were a 100-loss team. So you were like, usually the A's are bad, but not this bad.
Right.
General opinion. And A's fans always think that they have the worst team ever because they won't pay for their players to stay. But, like, they're not usually this bad, you know? Right. There's a little bit of a boy cried wolf online on Twitter, so I just stopped looking at Twitter. Because, whatever. I think I'm better mentally for it, but...
Oh, 100%.
Thank you. So, it Slack is all I need. But, there were 4 players of the 2023 Oakland Athletics who threw more than 100 innings. I would like you to guess any of them.
They threw more than 103 innings.
100. Just 100.
100. Okay. Let's think here. 100 innings. 100 innings. 100 innings.
Think of the 2023 Athletics. Think of the A's in general.
See, here's the problem. I can't think of any names. The 2023 Athletic. Like, that's the hard part.
I'm shocked.
Shocked. Okay. Paul Blackburn, maybe?
103.
Okay.
103. He was fine. He was injured for half the year, and he had a really bad blister. But when he was pitching, he was fine.
J.P. Sears threw a lot of innings, didn't he?
He was the ace the whole damn year.
Oh, my God.
He threw 172 innings. That led the team staff. He started 32 games. That did not lead the staff, but it was second. He had a 4.54 ERA. Which basically was the best for any pitcher who threw that much. He had a 90 ERA plus. It was almost the lead.
Trying to think here.
Recent Sears was trades. Fine. Keep in mind, I'm a Sears hater, but
the Kyle Muller throw 100.
Kyle Muller was the opening day starter. He threw 77 innings.
Oh my God!
He was demoted. Would you like to guess what his ERA was to end the season?
I'm going to guess it was probably over 7.
7.60.
Oh, dear God. All right.
Would you like to guess? His WAR was negative 1.4. B WAR.
That's incredible.
He was so bad.
Your WAR was so bad you had to give wins back to the other team.
Oh, a big Shintaro Fujinami mood there. But, like, he was on the team until late April. And again, like I said, that April team was one of the worst teams I've ever, like, the worst team I've ever seen. And by May 22nd, he was demoted, and he popped back up in late August, September. And in late August, September, I'm the big Kyle Muller hater, but I do want to say he's Kendall Graveman. He's a lefty. He has some really good off-speed pitches. His stuff on his slider is fine. His fastball is abhorrent. He needs to stop throwing it. But, like, you can see a route here to where he's a fine reliever. And at that point, if you're a fine reliever, you're going to have that season where you're, like, ineffably good. I think that's Kendall Graveman. Remember, Kendall Graveman was the opening day starter for the A's for, like, 3 straight years? So there's a path here for Kyle Muller. So don't, you may hear about Kyle Muller. You may think Kyle Muller's bad, but like, he is bad, but there's something there. Even still, 77 innings, 56 strikeouts. I don't even want to talk about the walks, but I will. 39 walks.
Jeez.
39 walks, 50-something strikeouts, demoted twice. His Las Vegas numbers weren't good. Because, again, it's Las Vegas and the pitching is terrible. And that's kind of the theme of all of it. Like, if you're really going to move the team here, you've been building, ever since the Big Three broke up, you've been building playoff teams where the pitching is bad because the Coliseum is so pitching friendly. And all of a sudden you're going to move to Vegas where pitching, like, you have to totally reinvent your roster in a couple years. I don't know if they do that. Like, I don't think they can. In Vegas, in 2023, Kyle Muller had a 7.26 ERA.
That's a little bit better than the majors.
Yeah, 62 innings, but like, in case you're wondering, it's not good. So,
probably not. I'd say no.
So you guessed the five, the fifth, the first, and the fourth leaders of innings pitched. I'm going to give you the rest. So it's J.P. Sears, number one. Ken Waldichuk, otherwise known as Kentucky Waldichuk, in our friend. He's number two.
That doesn't surprise me. He came over from the Yankees.
141 innings pitched. Luis Medina.
Which Luis Medina? There's like multiple.
The Yankees one.
The Yankees one. Okay.
Come on, dude. He was like the number one Yankees prospect for years.
Yeah, he was overhyped.
Yes, of course, because all Yankees prospects are
all
overhyped.
All Yankees prospects are overhyped.
You get it.
I do.
So I saw Luis Medina start in Double A, where he went 1.2 innings pitched, 5 walks, 6 earned runs, and like 2 strikeouts. And I was like, dude, this guy's never going to the majors. So I became his biggest hater. He was one of the best A's pitchers this year, to the point where, oh, a guy we both mutually respect for his brilliance tried to tell me, like, Luis Medina is a starter. Like, he's fine. And I was like, you don't understand. I've been traumatized. Like, I have PTSD. Don't talk to me. But at the same time, he is a 24-year-old who had average numbers in the majors. Like, I mean, he had 109 innings pitched, 66 earned runs, 106 strikeouts.
Yeah.
An ERA plus of 75. Like, yeah, fine. I think he's a reliever, but I think he's a good reliever. Like, Kyle Muller may be a bad reliever. I think Luis Medina is a good reliever. But he was third on this list. And Kentucky Waldichuk, like, I know he's a good Yankee. Like, I think he's a number two starter, but he's only 25, 26 coming into the next year. But like, his B-WAR was negative 0.1, so he basically didn't do anything. And Luis Medina, I mean, again, all these guys ping-ponged from Vegas. Luis Medina's B-WAR was negative 0.1. So, like, they're all neutral. Even your best pitchers were neutral to bad. Except Sears, which I don't want to call him good. So then you have Blackburn, who was hurt for a lot of the year, and Muller, who was demoted for most of the year. That's it. Those are the only pitchers who threw over 100 innings for the A's.
They have it.
That's like, Lucas Erceg was a good quote unquote reliever for them. He's a third baseman in the Brewers organization who converted to pitching after he battled alcoholism. It's a really good story, to the point where it's like a very Oakland A's thing to do to roster him. He had a 5.9 walks per 9, 11.9 strikeouts through 9, to the point where you're like, oh, that's a good reliever. But like, he's a total expansion draft guy. He was picked in the expansion draft that our friends had and we'll get to that in another episode. Shintaro Fujinami, what do you remember about his season?
It sucked.
We talked about this in the podcast already. He had a negative 2.1 B-War.
That's right.
Negative 2.1. I don't know if he should get a major league contract.
Someone's going to do it.
Someone stupid. And it's probably going to be the A's. If the A's do it, I'm like, well, you know, what are you going to do? But if anyone else does it, I'm like, that's stupid. Like, what are you doing? You can get better. James Caprillion injured himself. He's one of those guys who takes himself so seriously, he doesn't have any fun in his job. Yep. He had a 6.34 ERA. He looked awful at the beginning of the year. Clawed back and then got hurt. I don't think he comes back onto a mound. He is 30 years old. And he's had a career of 300 innings. Over 4 years, he's been hurt a billion times. Speaking of Yankees prospects, it's bad. And we're starting to get to the bottom of the barrel here. Like, I could talk about Hogan Harris and Adrian Martinez, and at a certain point, I'm embarrassing myself because I know who they are. What do you know about Mason Miller? And what are your thoughts about him?
I think he's going to be good. He looked good in his limited starts. I think he's going to be good.
I think
he's a future ace.
When was the first time you heard about him?
When he came up.
Okay. Debut.
Yeah.
He's the most ephemeral superstar of this decade. Because I have absolutely no idea what to say about him.
Mm-hmm.
If he never impacts Major League Baseball, I won't be surprised. If he's Jacob DeGrom, I won't be surprised. Mm-hmm. I think he is Jacob DeGrom, though, because of his diabetes, he'll constantly be in and out of getting injured.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's not injured, he'll be an ace. I got to watch him pitch in September with Ethan, our friend, and he got two innings through a Padres lineup with Soto and Machado, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Looked very good, but he was coming back from that injury that kept him out from April to September, which again, that's kind of the thing. And the A's said he's only going to be a reliever next year, which
that's dumb.
Listen, I don't think Ohtani's going to be anything but a reliever going forward.
I would agree with that, because we don't know what that surgery is going to do to him.
Exactly. And so I think making Mason Miller a reliever and then maybe moving him to an Andrew Miller role, but like better than Andrew Miller ever was, that's kind of the ceiling here. I hope he's a starter. I don't know. It's 25. He's too young to throw out things, but if he's just a reliever, oh well. The A's have another Hendricks on their hands. Yeah. So the next A's team that goes to the playoffs will have Mason Miller closing. That's not the problem, though. I just listed all the A's pitchers who I listened. I don't watch the games. I can't deal with that amount of garbage in front of my eyes, but I can listen to it because the A's radio announcers are incredible. I just kind of listed all the guys. So, like, who do the A's expect to start next year? Who's their, like, after June 1st, their team WRC Plus was, like, 95. And I think that their hitting staff is fine. Langeliers is Mike Zunino. Soderstrom was atrocious, but I think he'll be better. Gelof was 110th percentile what he should be, but I still think he'll be fine. Like, Ryan Noda had, like, he was on pace for 300 strikeouts, but also for, like, excuse me, Ryan Noda had 170 strikeouts, but also 77 walks in 400 at-bats. There's something there.
Yeah.
His five pick, there's something there. It's not good, but, like, the next day's playoff team isn't going to be good. They're just going to have a bunch of bad players, and they'll be in the playoffs. The pitching is bad, and I'm worried about it a lot. And I think that's my Festivus grievance of, like, What are you doing with the pitching? Where is it going? Everyone's bad here, and there's no one in the roster except Estes, who I mentioned earlier in this episode, is like, oh, Estes is good. There's no one but Estes. Mesa Miller, who is a diabetic and can't stay healthy for reasons beyond his control, and maybe Roiber, who they got in the Murphy trade. Roiber's good, but Roiber was in, he was hurt in part of his AA season. So yeah. He's only 22. He had a 4 ERA. No, that was in the Arizona League. He had a 5.48 ERA in the Texas League last year, 67 innings, 89 strikeouts, 200 batters faced, which Midland is a weird, very weird place to pitch. So that's not the worst. Like, he struck out a bunch of guys. That's kind of what matters. I think he'd be a top 100 prospect in any other. Like, if he was the Yankees prospect, he'd be top 30 because the Yankees. But
yeah,
the A's pitching roster from top to bottom through all their minor leagues is Mesa Miller, Roiber, Estes, Luis Medina, kind of. That's it. And I think that's my rant. It's like, I have to watch this team try and scrape together pitchers. And it's not that I doubt the front office. I do doubt the front office, but like, I doubt where they're going to play in 3 years. Because if they're playing in the Coliseum, yeah, they can find scrap metal to pitch there. If they're playing it in the Giant Stadium, kind of the same. But if they're playing in Vegas, interesting.
Yeah, they're in trouble.
They're in trouble.
Yeah.
So that's my rant. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. Well, hey, let's wrap this up. Let's go real quick. Real quick, two grievances, real quick, rapid fire, and then a feat of strength. So give me two grievances and then a feat of strength.
All right, go first.
All right, first grievance. And this comes from being a parent. When you go to the store and your child literally wants thinks you're buying something for them, they're like, oh, that toy's for me. You're going to buy me a toy. Like, no. Pat Dad wants to buy a Lego set for himself. Not for you. Or they just like run away from you in the store or just like walk carefree, man. Like, taking a child to a store is a nightmare. So that's grievance number one.
How do you deal with it? How do you deal with it?
I don't. I let Marissa deal with it.
There you go.
I don't. That's why I don't go shopping anymore. I let her have fun with it, or I have her leave the kiddo home with me. Grievance number two, the Panera lemonade. You know, when this was a better country, the lemonade didn't kill people. You know, I guess you could say when life gives you lemons, Panera kills you with them. But a feat of strength, you know, just going in to the new year, healthy, happy. You know, it's been a tough year for me, you know, losing someone I was very close to, my grandmother, and, you know, especially going through this Eagle season, without her, has been tough, but, you know, a feat of strength is, you know, being able to handle that and being able to, you know, yeah, it sucks doing this without her, watching this without her, not having her around, not being able to call her, you know, especially this time of year, you know, like Christmas was her holiday, man. Like, she loved it. Yeah, dude, she, this was her time of the year. She shined, man. Like, I remember being a kid, man. She'd show up with just bags and bags of stuff for us. And like, she'd make dinner for us. And like, this always burnt the rolls, man. The rolls always had to be burned. And that's but hilarious. You know what? That's the type of person Granny was, man. She was the absolute best. And this was always her time of year. And, you know, a feat of strength is, you know, I'm able to be sad about it. And I do miss her. And it sucks not having her around. But, you know, we're you know, my family's small.
It is. It really is.
It's me, Marissa, Sophie, and then my mom, my sister, her husband, my uncle, and my aunt, and that's it. You know, it's just the seven of us, eight of us, and, you know, come the new year, 3 weeks into the new year, we're adding a ninth. My sister will be having my first niece or nephew. I don't know what yet. We won't know until
till the day
that comes. But, you know, man, like, it's amazing that my sister, you know, became pregnant right after my grandmother passed, you know, almost as if, like, you know, it's we had this incredible loss, which
it's
hurt.
How life happens.
It hurt.
It finds
but
a
we
way.
Have life finds a way. We have this incredible miracle coming, and I can't wait for that kid to get here. So that's where I'm at.
I'm so excited for that message.
Yeah, I can't wait.
When you put that in there.
I can't wait. Yeah.
Yeah. I have lots of small grievances in this world of pain that we live in. And I think it's always been a world of pain. Mm-hmm. I mean, small grievances politically of, like, where are we going as a country? And
right.
We're funding a genocide and things like that, which we've been doing a lot. But this one in particular is so obvious. But, I think that a strength for me is my support system.
Yeah.
Been annoying them to no end this year. Not annoying them to no end, but after all these years of them relying on me, I've started to rely on them, and I cannot thank them enough, and I've been trying to thank them enough for, like, the people that I've fallen into giving me advice. And even when they can't give me advice, because my problems are intractable and insane. Mm-hmm. I cannot, like, from where I am as a person, I cannot thank them enough for helping me be the person I'll become in a couple years. And so that's truly unique and a real important part of this year. And when I say this support system, I mean you. I mean all the people who I
100% agree.
To see.
Man, without that group, man, you know, this year was sucked. And, like, not even just this year, but, you know, I go back to 2020, you know, and what, you know, 2021 as well, you know, my ex walked out on me. You guys are my support group. Yeah. I went through a horrific, horrific accident. You guys were my support group.
Terrifying accident.
You know, if it weren't, and, like, you know, the sim gets wild and we get heated. But we're still an awesome group. We're an awesome group of people from all over the country and all over the world.
Yep.
United by this stupid sport that we hate so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, like without this group, you know, it would have been a rougher year. And, you know, especially this pod, you know, when Naeem and Lewis brought me on back in 2022 when the Phillies were having that first run. You know, I didn't expect to become as involved as I am in now. And, like, this pod has given me, like, a weekly voice to talk about the stupid sport, rant about the things I love about it and rant about the things I hate about it. And not only that, do it with my buddies, with Naeem, with Dylan, with you, with Jory, with everyone I've had on and I've been on with, you know, Luis, Phil, Kevin, you know, all of them.
Yep.
You know,
I know that in, like, 25 years, I'm going to be coming back on these episodes and listening to them. Maybe I'll get really into walking or something, and I'm going to find you
reminisce.
All and be like, I'm going to reminisce, and I am going to reach out to every single one of you. It's going to be you most of all. And thank you. And I know we'll still be talking because I have that confidence, immature confidence.
This group that we have is...
This group that we have, man.
It's, like, tight-knit, man. Like,
there's no other way to ration it. Like, there's no other logic of like, no, like, you don't know if you're going to talk to these people in 20 years, but like I don't for every other group in my life, but this group.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's not every day, I'm going to be finding you.
Well,
I'll be like,
we'll all find a way.
I was listening to the podcast we recorded after Yamamoto, who sucks, signed that deal with the Dodgers. And I just have to thank you for being there and it's going to be, and that's why I'm so excited to be on this podcast and get back on to talk about the sim and to move closer to y'all. And it'll be a really fun period. So that's what that's my strength.
And that's a good strength. And you know,
I'm excited for the future.
Yeah. I think this positive note, we spent an hour and 15 minutes just complaining. I think the positive note here is a great way to leave it off. So the frack buddy, dude, thank you for joining me, for having a few drinks and ranting about the sport and and in general. And dude, have a great holiday, great new year, man. Yep. And
I love you, buddy, and you take care.
I love you too, man.
Everyone else in your life.
That's the plan. All right, that's enough soppy stuff. Let's kick it over for the outro.
Alright folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Rain Delay Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Rain Delay Radio is executive produced by Lewis. My name is Naim. I hosted the intro. I also edited this episode. Pat hosted our Festivus airing of Grievances along with Frack. Thanks again to Frack for coming back for that. Our theme music was composed by Chuck Lease. Rain Delay Radio usually releases every Monday morning at 1 a.m. Central Time, although, like I said, because of the holiday, we were a day late this week, and depending on what time I get home from my vacation, might be on time or might be late next week as well. We'll have to see. Thank you once again for listening, everybody, and I hope you've had a great year with us. We've certainly had a great year with you. Wishing you a very, very happy new year, and we'll see you next year. Bye.